And now, the moment you've all been waiting for. Andy White and Nick Butler talk social media.
I think if we have an intro that's based on people scripting it, they're not going to get it.
So what do you think we should say?
Conversations around social media, technology, two of the brightest social media entrepreneurs in the south of England today.
Yeah, let me write that down.
I think the idea is we've got to go around every cafe in the south of England and record a different episode each one.
What should we call it, though?
It's all about social media. It's Andy White and the Loudmouth Man. Social media white noise.
I like it.
And now... Oh, sod it. Everything they just said.
And we're on air. Hello, everybody. My name's Dr. Pod Andy White. And we're in a rather windy, exposed place, and Nick is wearing a very fetching bright orange top.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Number 39.
I think you're right.
Number 39 of social media white noise.
What was that squeaking noise?
Here again. No, it's me talking.
Okay.
So here again, we're recycling a coffee shop because...
I'm drinking coffee now.
They changed management, ironically enough, just a few months after we visited. It's still the conservatory, cafe in the park, but they're under new management, and I didn't feel it was fair to leave the review and leave the comments about the previous management for the shop. And that's my excuse, and I'm sticking to it.
So basically what Nick is saying in English is that we've been here before, but it's now under new management, so it's effectively a new coffee shop. And what is the venue, Nick? What's it called?
This is the conservatory, the cafe in the park, yes. Which I mentioned about.
We'll have to take
ago.
A slightly different picture of it today.
It's really great to know that with those really huge headphones on and that fantastic microphone that you pay attention to the words that I say.
Do you know, I don't listen to my podcasts until I listen to them. Does that make sense? Because I'm so busy twiddling knobs. I'm sort
I
of intellectually floating over the top of it. But then a month down the road, when the queue gets down to episode 39 of Social Media White Noise, and it's just in my listening queue, I'll listen to it and go, oh, God, they're good, aren't they, that Nick Butler and Andy White? Oh, that's me.
Well, this is why we did it, wasn't it? Because we always had these conversations over coffee. And we always had these conversations over coffee there where you would basically be spending your time, you know, drilling me for information, Vicar. And I'd be sort of dumping this data, and then about 2 weeks later, Andy would be phoning me up and saying, do you remember when you talked about that? And I'd say, okay, well, why don't we just record these shows?
Well, no, the real motive, Nick, was because you talk at so many levels above everyone else that I have to have a team of scientists analyse the recording.
That's a documentalism. And
is
there
that
we
what he
are.
Says?
This is mentioned in this show.
The first mention of documentary.
Everybody take a drink.
Hey, documentary. Christian Payne.
And speaking of drinks, the coffee here is it's served in fantastic white mugs that are appropriately sized.
A nice shape. They sort of pinch down to the bottom.
Yeah, they are the absolutely appropriate shape for a coffee cup.
Yes. Just in case anybody, you know, this is the first time they're listening to this podcast. We do talk about tech in a minute, don't we?
Just hang on. And the coffee, I have to say, if it was down to me, I'd probably add probably just a little bit more, just a smidgen more, just maybe a teaspoon more of coffee in each portion there, just to make it a little bit stronger, because that's what it wants. It just wants to be just a little bit more.
Nick, of course, the coffee connoisseur. Can you do any dirty talk on the coffee?
To be honest...
Any sexual innuendos?
Well, to be honest, this coffee is like the sort of young teenage girl who just goes out on her first date. You know, it's the white stilettos and the bad handbag.
Yeah, kind of like girl next door sort of coffee.
Not so much the girl next door, more sort of the girl you meet down at the party that you snog in the kitchen.
Okay. And so then you remember it about 11 o'clock the following morning.
It's certainly the coffee there that you appreciate drinking at the time.
Yeah. Okay, and just moving on. So we're talking today about Google getting into the stock market, which is fascinating. We'll talk
you
about
are
a minute.
On high speed. Have you been running today?
I have been for a run. I've got lots of endorphins running through my body.
Shall I
slow?
Ironically enough, you're going faster even for me. So we're talking about Google
higher,
stock
Nick.
Markets.
Yeah, and also five problems with... I thought it's moisturiser. It's because the sun's glinting, the bright sky's glinting off my screen. Five problems with measuring social media. Now, that's going to be a juicy one. Because after all, this is social media white noise. And read it later, which is something you've discovered.
Ironic that we should talk about social media after all. We're also going to talk about Read It Later.
Which we'll talk about later. And
Flavors.me,
which I think I've seen. And it's very nice.
And I've sort of played with it. I'm sort of haven't gotten my finger out to actually get it all set up, but we'll come back to that.
But first, Nick, can we talk about your encounter with the policewoman? Because of your orange T-shirt. Are we allowed to talk about it?
It turned into one of those sort of not the 9 o'clock news moments. I half expected her to say that I was... So what it is
Will Harris TM.
I was walking down... I was walking down the street. I just
one
left
day
the West Street.
In the merry, merry month. Sorry.
In the merry, merry month of hey.
May. With an orange t-shirt on.
And I have this bright orange t-shirt. It's actually a t-shirt that says Clockwork Orange on it, okay?
At the bottom, there's a Clockwork Orange thing. It's right at the bottom of the line. Very odd.
Anyway, so I got stopped by this policewoman who said, I'm stopping you, sir, because you were seen outside the Royal Bank of Scotland just 5 minutes ago. I said, well, no, you didn't. No, I wasn't. And, you know, no, I wasn't at all.
You
and,
denied it, and, Mr.
And,
Butler.
And I think she was a little bit taken aback by the fact that I wasn't precisely sort of kowtowing to the feeling guilty about it. I was more amused at the fact that CCTV had apparently seen me somewhere where I hadn't actually been. And, you know, bearing in mind that CCTV is there to really help the police with sort of accurate identification and to aid and assist in investigations. So it turns out they were looking for an Asian guy who was wearing an orange
I've always t-shirt. Thought, Nick, you do look very Asian.
I think it's the beard.
It's the beard and the way that you do look Asian.
I just look slightly like... And, yes. I think possibly the backpack and the 3 rounds of C4 strapped to my chest were probably a little bit much at the time. But,
I shall not comment on that.
And so she sort of stopped to sort of start asking me some questions, and I was sort of quite blunt and say, well, since you're stopping me here and your CCTV operators have evidently gotten the wrong person... Presumably there are more people out on the streets looking for the right person, such as that Asian guy who's down, very clearly Asian guy who's wearing an orange shirt, he's just actually down my street for me now. And she said, well...
Did you see him?
I saw him.
You saw him?
I said, that's the person you're looking for, he's all the way down there. Right. So it wasn't a case of being stopped because I looked Asian, it was a case of genuine mistaken identity. And it was legitimate mistaken identity in terms of communication, because not 100 yards away, there was another chap, my height, wearing an orange T-shirt.
Right.
What threw the police officer more was that as soon as she said, well, I'd like to take down your details and ask you some more questions, I said, great, I'm going to record this whilst we do it. And she wanted to know why. I said, well... I think it's important that we're obviously ensuring that we would get all the facts correct. So whilst you're recording the facts on your paper, I think I should record the facts for myself. Mm. I think it's an important thing to do. Besides, it'll make great blogger content. It'll make great conversational
it's all
content.
Of that.
Yes.
To which she replied,
and she just couldn't quite get to grips with this. So she sort of started on this sort of, you know, what's your name? What's your address? What's your date of birth?
Yeah.
Have you been in trouble with the police before? Now, these are all questions that, you know, apparently if we were carrying ID cards, this would have saved the police a lot of time. I still can't quite work out why. Because the next step she did was she gets on the radio to the Police National Crimes database and inquires for my details as to whether or not they, you know, they need to pull me in.
Sorry, I'll just put my hand in some bird poo. Carry on.
And,
Towel, please. Thank
towel,
you.
Towel, please. Here we are.
Carry on.
And I sort of said, let me just get this straight. You're going to inquire based on a name and an address and so forth. Bearing in mind that you've already got your visual identification wrong, what happens if the information you have in this database is wrong? She doesn't have an answer for that. What happens if the information... And this is the concern we keep coming back to, is these top-down databases, the databases that are run by groups over which you have no authority. Oh, sure, there's the Freedom of Information Act. I could investigate what information is held on me, but that's the point. I'm not investigating freedom information that's held on me. I need to understand the mistakes that are being made about the information held on me. Because right about now, my information is tied up with this investigation. It acts as an element of information that is associated with this criminal investigation.
Are you going to put this recording online?
I'm going to go through it a couple of times because I think I was being a bit of a dick in a couple of points. I don't feel...
If you do, we'll link... Should we link to it if you do?
And personally, I don't feel it was fair to the police officer, because she was doing the work consistently. She was doing it politely.
I have had a listen, listeners, and she did sound very... Was she hot? Because she sounded really nice, actually.
That's totally inappropriate. I'm totally not going down that road.
She sounded really nice.
I have to explain that the summer has come out, the sunshine has come out, and Andy is frisky like a march
hare. I've got
hair.
A little problem.
needs to say, it makes doing the whole conversation that though. So there we are. And I recorded the whole thing. And we sort of finished up the details. And I got my receipt. I got my stop and search receipt.
Getting a receipt?
You know, that has the...
You framed
it,
Nick.
And it's an important thing. It's something that I don't feel we have enough understanding of, because there are no, you know, you you go through school, and you'll go through school, and you'll be sort of taught how to handle change, and taught how to buy things at shops, and, you know, taught how to write letters.
Mm.
We aren't actually taught what to expect if we're stopped by the police and what we should do. We're not taught that at all. In fact, we have no expectations, which leads to this great opportunity for anything to occur because people don't have an education about it.
I think people should be educated. I think that, you know, how you have self-defence classes in case you're attacked in the street. You should have a how to deal with a police officer.
Yeah, well, we
if
should.
If you're dealt with by a police officer.
It should be part of our cultural grounding in having at least the minimal expectation. That's a terrible word. Minimal expectation. As to what you should expect to occur and what is allowable.
Mm.
And the fact that that's not happening and that hasn't happened is interesting, because it just leads to the fact that we don't want to have too much education in areas where people's ignorance actually helps with them being caught.
Mm.
You know? Hello, here comes the owner.
It's the owner.
Here comes the operator, sorry.
Yeah.
It was not frozen at all.
No, it wasn't frozen, it was very nice. I was a bit disappointed, actually. Can you freeze one and bring it out? this is the Bakewell tart.
If we can be really cheeky, can we grab a couple more cups of coffee? And then, yeah, would you mind?
No,
that's fantastic, thank you.
Do you want yours white again, then?
Yeah, just a splodge of milk. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Is that dead?
Just top it up. That'd be lovely. Thank you very much. Right, okay. We better get on to the first item, Nick, because we're at some 10 minutes. God, we're a third of the way into our show, and we haven't even talked about tech yet. Google getting into the stock markets.
Very small story.
Is this something they're offering to the public, or are just they getting into the stock market?
Well, it's not them getting into the stock market. They're actually going to create a market. They're going to create a market for trading in stocks and shares.
Mm.
So they're going to create an index. There are plenty of stock markets out there against which you can trade, in which case you can buy shares in companies, trade those shares, trade that information.
Yeah.
Where Google have the operational value out of this is that Google have a lot more information about those companies than most other people, because obviously you've got search information available. And in
Absolutely.
Having that
yeah.
search information available, it does change... For me, it actually sort of changes the marketplace, because what you could start doing is not just including search engine optimization, but index price optimization.
Do you think you could predict the lottery numbers by looking at Google search?
No, I don't think you can predict lottery numbers.
Me neither.
Because it's a completely random thing there, and you're going off on one of those
Carry on.
You're going off on one of those really bad, you've got to stop watching numbers in Charlie Epps, okay?
What's Charlie Epp?
Charlie Epps, the main character
Numbers. Oh, sorry, Charlie
you
Epps.
Obviously don't watch this.
I don't watch Numbers.
This is like me quoting from Sex and the City and nobody getting it. And me
I used to watch
admit.
That. Anyway, look, Google and stocks.
Google are back in stock markets.
Yes.
It didn't get a lot of big press. I don't think people are that... So it's not sexy, it's not fun, it's not interesting. But if Google start off with a stock market, and bearing in mind that they're already indexing stock market information as well...
Look, I still don't get it. Please explain to me, because I don't understand what you mean.
What
Google are investing in the stock market?
They're not investing in the stock markets. So Google would basically be creating a market whereby they have a collection, and the people who join that market have a collection of shares in companies.
Oh, I see. That's sort of lumping together other companies and sort of making them get a share that you can buy.
And as a result, saying in this collection, imagine if a few of us got together and we all had shares in companies.
Yes.
We all decided that we're just going to share between ourselves those shares.
Yep.
We're going to share that information between ourselves. That's effectively what building a market is all about.
Okay.
And so the net result is that if you have lots more people joining in, you get a wider proportion of shares available, you get a different distribution of wealth, and you get a different distribution of opportunity to invest, as well as different distribution of opportunity of information. At the moment, Google are not a stock market. Google are a data market. And this leads me to my point. I think what we're going
to see
with Google...
Thank you very much.
Fantastic.
Lovely,
thank
lovely,
you.
Lovely.
And we shall pop back in. Have you got the old cash thingy for that? Yeah.
Oh, sorry, yes. Let's get the cash thingy.
Sorry,
listeners. Just getting the cash thingy so we can pay for the coffees.
There we go.
Here's the cash thingy.
If we consider that Google are able to do a lot of sharing of data...
How much do we owe you?
And £3.20. What we will see is that you could start turning data into value.
£3.20. I do apologise.
It's because I'm talking at
you. It was Nick's fault, because he's talking while I'm trying to pay you.
Because I always find that, you know, large gaps of silence in a podcast. Thank you. Large gaps of silence in a podcast work so well.
Is that a receipt there, Nick, I need to put in here?
It is indeed. But we'll hold on to that for the moment.
Okay.
Now, if we consider at the moment people are dealing in shares in terms of monetary value.
Yeah.
What have we dealt with shares in terms of data value? What if you could turn data into shares? What if holding information or access to information or the utilization of information? Well, now, there's something that comes out of this, and we'll talk more about it in the next show, which is the fact that the government are going to open up data, the OpenGov data.
Okay, sounds good
but
in theory.
I can see that we could change the markets from a fiscal foundation of money invested in shares to an additional layer, which is a data. So an informational or a knowledge-based value. Now, the traditional spec on this is most people go, oh, well, if I know a bit of information, I can copy it freely, etc., etc., etc. But it's important to understand, money doesn't actually exist. Money isn't a real thing. Money is a metaphor. Money is exclusively a metaphor, which we all agree to add a definition to. Data is a metaphor.
Well, sure, information we all agree to hold metaphor. Us real, if you like.
And as a result of information being a metaphor, if you've just changed the value of that metaphor, I mean, we see it already, Microsoft points, so you buy points, or you know, you can buy credits for things, and as a result, information becomes something that can be traded for, and we've already got an early market for that. It's called the search engine market.
Yeah.
People are already trading keywords, and people are trading AdWords, and if you imagine that that's already a market for information. So that's what I'm right. saying is you could basically be a company whose value is in your AdWords or whose value is in your keywords and how you utilise that.
I shall consider what you've said, Nick.
It's my crazy idea time.
And come up with some sort of response in a couple of weeks.
Moving on.
Five problems with measuring social media. Now, just before, I arrived at Nick's pad this morning and we were just looking at the article.
Because you've got his wallet.
Because
stuff,
it's a bit of a manky morning. For
we
me.
Are traditionally well-organised individuals,
yes,
aren't
I've
we?
I've got no money. I'm like a tramp,
aren't we? And yeah. There is this article called Five Problems with Social Media, which I sort of bookmarked away to one side. I actually bookmarked it on Read It Later.
Did you? Yes, you used Read
we'll,
It Later.
We'll talk
about
that
later
in a little bit.
Later. Hey, we could have a running joke about that, Nick, couldn't we? We could keep saying we'll talk about it later, but never do. Just like we did with Google Apps for your domain.
Which is a fantastic product, and we will talk about that later.
Yeah, later.
And this article from Web Worker Daily, Five Problems with Social Media Marketing.
He's looking on his iPhone because we don't
have
internet.
And I'm now actually able to bring it up because thanks to Read It Later, I've got it bookmarked away.
Yeah, we'll talk about that
so
later.
So they contact about... The content's basically social media is nebulous, it's not social media, it's really social marketing. Social marketing is old school and it's trapped in old school marketing speak. What I actually enjoyed about this article is we're kind of beginning to see the start of people talking about the emperor's clothes or the elephant in the room. We're beginning to see people sort of say, I wrote about this 4 years ago. This isn't something new, this is a discipline, this is an additional discipline. It isn't a... And I think to exemplify this,
sorry about the wind, folks.
We see so many social media types whose actual success has come from selling a book, which is old media, or whose success comes from
giving
a presentation.
But what is a social media type? See, I have to say, I am not. I don't think I'm a huge fan of these definitions we've come up with. Social media.
It's
is that an accurate? Is it a good
words.
Definition? Is it a? But can't we just say, "Oh, we're using the internet more now to communicate and market ourselves," rather than say, "social media"?
Because we're already doing that. That's the search engine optimization 1.0. The social part in it, the bit that everybody keeps forgetting,
well, keeps
is
not
this
getting.
Is about the overheard conversation.
The very first conversation I ever had with you was about the overheard conversation. And it probably was overheard.
And the social media marketing thing, it goes to exactly that point. It addresses a lot of the key issues that I said. Is this, what we can do is we can start taking information and present it in such a way that other people can discover it and share it. And in that discovering and sharing, that's the social part of that media. The trouble is people are looking to make this into a sort of exclusive theoretical practice like search engine optimization was. And I talked about social media optimization or social network optimization. And in my view, the social media optimization simply comes down to, you know, arrive, listen, ask, deliver, provide. It's just
yes.
get involved.
Yeah.
And this article on the five problems with it, it skips off one of the sort of more important aspects here, which is the fact that people look for return on investment in social media. They're constantly looking at, oh, what's the ROI? which is interesting because they never specify what the investment part of that ROI will be. Yeah. Mm. If their investment is, we want to give 500 quid,
yeah.
That's not the point. Social media and social, the socialisation aspect of it, you don't throw money at something to be more social. You don't throw money, you throw time and you throw attendance. And you also throw interaction. And with those things in place, that's your investment. Now, the monetary investment on that is therefore, you know, therefore if I'm not putting money in, therefore there's nothing to come back out of it, possibly.
Mm.
But we constantly see that where companies invest their time, their attendance, their interactivity, like eBuy.com, like Amazon, and so forth, where they actually take part in having conversations with their consumers, that raises that goodwill feeling, that sort of good influence feeling. They become more influential and they create content that people can take away and share. You mean YouTube are actually up there because YouTube allow a whole bunch of people to create content that they can constantly share.
Hmm.
I was amazed at the launch of the new BBC iPlayer because they talked about it being a simple and connected world, but you still cannot take content from BBC Player and host it on your own website. So you can't take the latest show that you want to talk to your friends about and have it on your website. Everything still has to be through their website.
Mm.
So there's a lack of actually it being social there. And it's not enough to simply build a website and have user accounts that can connect to each other and say, see, we're social because we can connect each other on this platform. That's not being a social network. That's just having a members database with groups. You're just a glorified forum in another format. But go and have a read of this article. Come back and tell me where I'm wrong. If anything, the WebWork article, and I should probably scroll all the way to the bottom of it, and it'll then tell me who's written this, and I can say, that was written. But I have to say, it doesn't actually say this. There's a very annoying thing here as it's come across. It hasn't included who the name of the author is. But with comments like, it's not social media stupid, I don't think any of us are actually trying to measure social media per se. We're looking to measure the reach or the interactions. So I mean, I'm already reflecting some of these comments, but I think we are seeing the start of the backlash, and this is a good thing because it'll against social media. I think we're going to see people go, you know.
Well, they're questioning it.
It's not so much all that, and it will take a lot of the fluff and the guff that has existed in these social media experts and gurus and social media ninjas.
Do you ever get called a social media expert? And do you mind?
Occasionally, and yes.
I get called it, and I'm just flabbergasted that I get called a social media expert.
It's because you do a podcast.
It's because I do a podcast. I'm not a social media expert, really. I don't know if anyone is.
I think the term expert has become so incredibly well hammered, it's become devalued.
Mm.
It's like an A-level. It's like an A-level. Anybody can get one.
We'll talk about Read It later. First, flavours.me. I know we're doing it out of order from the show notes, but I'm sure I've been here before. Is this this thing that lets you set up a sort of a bit like a homepage for you, and it lets you aggregate other bits and pieces into it?
Yeah, they're letting you create your it's the flavour of you. I mean, I've got it set up so I aggregate my Twitter, my Postgres, my Tumblr, my YouTube, RSS
content. One central point.
So again, it's doing Tumblr does it in a, you know, the most recent article to come in any stream is posted as the most recent post. So this is a case of saying, okay, there are lots of sections on the site, and on that one page that represents you, you can then have it laid, and you can pick different layouts. I picked the grid layout.
Yeah.
And, you know, that grid layout shows my Twitter stream.
It does look very pretty.
It shows my blog. It shows what I've posted in YouTube. It shows what I've posted on Tumblr, what I've shared in Google.
Yes.
What I've posted lately in Flickr. And they've got lots of other interaction. That's brilliant. And it all hangs together well. And you can actually, for the $20 a year, what it'll let you do is it'll let you register your name as you can host your domain there.
Okay.
But it's not hosting your whole blog there, so you'd obviously have to put your blog on a different domain.
Yeah.
Which might or may or may not upset you if you're concerned about SEO, because obviously your links will change.
Yeah.
But what it will do is it will also give you some statistics, and it'll give you stats for people who've come to your site.
Okay.
Now, it will also then give you stats of where people are exiting to all your other different media. And of course, if people are then exiting to Twitter or exiting to YouTube, it gives you a way of measuring that bounce to those locations.
Now, why should people use flavours.me, right, in preference to just an about page on their blog or their website that gives centralises all the information? apart from the fact that it looks a lot prettier, probably.
Well, I don't think that it's a reason that you should use it because it's better. I think you should use it if, like me, you're not actually interested in having the design skills to put together that sort of page.
Right.
On your website. I suspect you would pay a lot of money to get your designers to build you a page that did exactly that.
Yeah.
And the core problem you have then is that every time a new service came along, you'd have to pay your designer to add that new service in.
Yes.
Whereas for $20 a year, Flavors are doing that for you.
Is there a free version of Flavors? Or is
there is a free version of Flavors, but it doesn't come with all the stats and the ability to add your domain name and so forth.
Right.
I mean, what you could do is you could create flavors. And then your domain name.
Yeah.
And then that would be, that would basically
just redirect it.
You know, you could then redirect people to that, but you'd have all these sort of weird problems of the redirects and the links and so forth. And I looked at it and I think, actually, I might give this a try. I might make this my new domain name. My new loudmouthman.com front end, and then have blog.loudmouthman.com. That's where my blog is hosted.
Yes.
So just give it a try. I'm going to give it an experiment, see what happens with it. It might be utterly rubbish.
Coughing. Excuse me.
Without giving these things a bit of a play, I don't think we actually get an opportunity to see what they're like.
Absolutely.
And I was really impressed with the sign-up process, which is dead easy.
Yeah.
The configuration process, which is doing like, edit, this is really straightforward. It felt like a little mix between Tumblr and Posterous. It feels like having Squarespace style functionality, because you can add your own background, you can change the fonts, you can change the colour schemes.
Is this the kind of web page you might redirect people to at the footer of your email, rather than like me? I have a footer that's probably bigger than most
of
the emails I send.
That's actually,
you can say, for all the information about me, go to, you know, flavors.me/drpod or loudmouthman or whatever
it is.
So it's a good place to centralise all your guff.
I really do like the format and the layout of it.
I kind of would like
to see more people sign up to it.
I'll definitely check that out. I'm definitely going to look at that.
Because it was certainly something that made life a little bit like, that's pretty, I like that.
Okay, Nick, so we're at 26 minutes. Let's just talk about Read It Later, because it is now later.
Read It Later.
It's something you discovered recently?
I discovered this because the usual thing is when you're a geek, you realise you have a problem and then you immediately try to solve it, which means you're immediately distracted from actually doing the work that was right in front of you at the time.
Yeah, I know that
because
one.
Instead of now fixing the work you're doing in time, you're now off on this new project because it isn't an interesting problem to solve and it'll fix everything else for you, and then you'll go back to that and I can't remember what project was that was working on. Never mind.
You need a stack, Nick. You need a stack.
The Read It Later was an answer to the problem I had where I saw this big document and I thought, I want to read that, but I want to read that on the train. I want to read it later. I thought, and I want to read it on my iPhone.
Yeah.
So I thought, how do I sync? What I would usually do is I would just bookmark it with Tumblr, or I'd bookmark it with StumbleUpon.
Yeah.
Or I'd bookmark it.
Or do it
in
as a to
Dig,
do. Or
do it as, and so what you have, it's all these different places. And all I want is this article available for me. Now, I used to use this thing called Avant Go or something like that on the Palm.
Oh, I remember that.
And
yes.
I used to basically push articles that you'd be interested
in. Yes, I use that on my iPack. My little iPack.
And I thought, well, I'm looking for something like that. So I literally just typed in read it later.
Yeah.
Actually, I went to a Firefox plugin.
Yeah.
Because the first thing I thought is maybe there's a Firefox plugin that'll bookmark this for me.
Yeah.
In such a way that'll be on all my other Mac, my other laptop for me. And I found this bookmark called Read It Later.
Uh-huh.
And what impressed me was not only does it bookmark the links for you, so you can click on a link and it'll bookmark that link. And what it'll do is it'll put it into Read It Later as the document, so as if you'd opened it up. Okay, and it puts it in. So you can read it later the page or read it later the link. That is then stored on Read It Later's main site. So you'll need to sign up to an account with Read It Later.
Okay.
So I'm on Firefox, I'm browsing, and I look at the five problems with social media, and I think I want to talk about that in the show.
But I'll read it later.
So I click the link for five problems with social media.
Yeah.
And rather than going to the page, I just right click and say, you know, add it to the Read It Later.
Yes.
Or I go to the page and add the whole page.
Yeah.
What now happens is when I open my iPhone.
Yes.
Or iPad.
Yeah.
When I open my iPhone and I open Read It Later, it will then synchronize all the links that I've pushed to my account.
Yeah.
It'll synchronize those as documents on my iPhone. So even with my iPhone switched off, you know, in airplane mode with no Wi-Fi, that content is still there for me to read.
It's forming a local cache, document-based cache.
So it's making a local document cache.
So is there a Read It Later client for the iPhone?
And there is a Read It Later client for the iPhone.
I'm with you. Okay, there's an app
which I can then open up. And of course, you can then set it to say, give me just the text, don't bother with the images, you know,
go
through a light form format.
Really nice.
And then it's just something I can then scroll through, read the document. When I'm finished with the document, I can then mark it as read.
Yeah.
I can also blog that document later.
Yeah.
I can bookmark it as something I want to blog about, add some notes, etc., etc.
Oh, that's really clever.
And of course, it just means that I don't have to think, oh, I need to open my laptop and now I need to get an internet connection and then I need to go to my bookmarks and I need to look at this. And because this is something that I think I want to read it, but then not bookmark it.
Okay.
I want to read it, but it's not something for delicious. I want to read it, but it's not something I want to add to stumble upon.
I like that. I'm definitely going to
check
that out.
Something I want to read it later.
Yeah, read it later.
And for the show, it's brilliant because now that I've talked about that, I can open this up, click on here, click on the tick to say...
I've read it.
I've gone to the bottom and I click on the little tick bar to say, I have now read that, and that's it.
Now, Nick, at 29 minutes and 30 seconds into the show, or certainly the bit where we're talking, are we allowed to talk about the exciting thing that's happening next week? Can we talk about it? And that it'll be slightly different?
I think we can't. I think we need to take the Sizemore rule here.
The Sizemore rule.
A Sizemore rule is that you don't mention something until it's absolutely fact.
Right.
Because between when you want to talk about it and it actually happening, there are all sorts of foul-ups that can happen.
Yes.
So I think it would be a good idea not to. But it's show number 40.
Oh, yes.
Show number 40.
But it might be on a different day.
It'll be on a slightly different day.
It might be on a Sunday. For
reasons that will make a lot of sense.
That we cannot disclose.
That we won't disclose. But it'll be an interesting time.
This podcast will self-destruct in 14 seconds.
And there we go.
Yeah.
So as the pigeons of hope gather around our table, looking endlessly at the crumbs that we have scattered about us.
That's right, with their beady eyes and
beaks. Second cup of coffee is slurped most generously. I'd like to say we're probably signing off now, aren't we?
We certainly are. I'm certainly signing off. I have been and will continue to be Andy White, aka Dr. Pard.
And I am Nick Butler, aka the Loudmouth Man of loudmouthman.com.
Goodbye, everybody. Have
Bye-bye.
A splendid fortnight.
Thanks for listening to Social Media White Noise, brought to you by Andy White, aka Dr. Pod, and Nick Butler, aka Loudmouth Man. Please visit www.socialmediawhitenoise.com, where you can leave comments, listen to the show straight from the webpage, and subscribe for free. Email us at ulot@socialmediawhitenoise.com. Follow us on Twitter, Dr. Pod and Loudmouth Man. We'd like to thank the coffee shops of Sussex, social media and technology, without whom this show would not be possible. See you soon. Peace.